Namaste and in la ketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host. And as always, namaste and in la ketch are two very important phrases I'd like you to consider. Namaste comes from the Sanskrit, spoken at Brahmi, and it simply means the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. In la ketch, from the other side of the world, is a Mayan phrase that means I am another you. So when you meet folks on the road, anywhere, have that kind of attitude, because they truly are another you, and you truly are a part of them. So with that, this week's guest is Indra Rinsler, and he is a really fascinating guy. He's a Vedic astrologer, works with Enneagrams and personality development in order to help people be more of who they are and to have more success in their lives. Early on, he was interested in numbers, of course, rather than words, which is kind of interesting for an astrologer. And he was involved in a small business in his 30s and 40s. So he's got some history and some varied experiences that I hope that we can tap into here as we get started. Indra, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Zen. Happy to be here.
Oh, great. That makes both of us happy. That's a good place to start, huh?
So, absolutely. It's a good place to end, too.
Right, exactly. Well, we'll stay there. So in your, you know, I want to get to the deeper stuff, but first let's start with your early life and how you got in touch with the direction that you eventually went to and the early signs of your connectivity to something greater than you.
Well, I have been remembering that I don't know whether it was my early 20s or late in my teens that I remembered that that I experienced the feeling that if I walked in a room that I could feel energy that was more than was the physical plane of the room, that there was an excitement, that there was an energy, there was a connectivity, there was a feeling, an expansion that was beyond what we would talk about on the physical plane. And as soon as that opened, that's like the Pandora's box. As soon as that opened for me, then anything is possible. You know, angels, reincarnation, causal planes, Harana Loka. I mean, there is anything is possible. Once you believe, once you conceive that that's beyond what you can see, then there's no end to what can be there. And so I think that was the very beginning. When I moved to California in the early 70s, I started going to, I found metaphysical bookstores and I started getting books. And that's when I started with astrology and the metaphysics. And I read so many different books and got started in a lifetime of seeking.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a teen, when you first started recognizing this, I'll just call it a sensation, right? It's kind of that awareness.
Sure.
Of what else is going on, that there's more going on than meets the eye. How did you see that reflected at least some in others? For instance, did you experience others as you were looking around connecting with you at an eye level, right? That's, I think, one of the things that reflects that sensitivity and if others are in that place, right? Because they're kind of sensing it too, or one would think that they would or sense. Did you have any of that happen as well?
No, I would say not. And as I look back, the people that I was hanging with, the college people, and then the people after that, even when we were living in a community, a commune together, mm-hmm. their idea of spirituality, you know, it's like, wow, there's spirituality. And they'd say, oh, that's great. And my idea was, wow, that was I'm still exploring it, you know, and sure. other people, it's like my kids, their idea of spiritual, they won't say they're spiritual like I am, but if you say, well, you have a spirituality within you, my eldest daughter said to me that she's getting, you know, I'm spiritual, I'm getting into my spirituality, but it wasn't like me or my ex-wife, her mother, what we had. And so I had to find, I found some, people who were of the family, but I had to seek further for the real spiritual people. And I've left groups, you know, I was really into community at the time. I was starting a commune and then starting my first business as a cooperative. That didn't work, so I had to undo that. And then I lived in a spiritual community for 20 years, and I've ended up at this point, you know, that I don't see, I've been to 56 countries as a world traveler, and I find that there's borders everywhere. We have to use our passport to get in and out, but I don't find the people different anywhere, that the borders are only man-made. And so the idea that the community, that my community doesn't end at my property line or the same skin color or the same, Hare Krishna chant or whatever it is, you know, that the community for me is something bigger, and it's you know, I suppose it's not even limited to just the earth, that there's right. It has to do more with the nature of things. It's more of flowing blood and,
well, yeah, and we heart think beating. That we're kind of I totally get that we think that we, or many of us think that we've been alone in space, and the reality is space is so vast that it doesn't make sense, right, that we're alone.
Okay,
right, it just knowing what else is out there, or what could be out there, it just seems like it doesn't.
I saw a video on somebody while I was waiting to get started. I was going through some friend requests. We had a power outage for 6.5 days, and I was doing a little bit of catch up, and a lady had a video, a 45 second video of sped up video of bees being incubated and born. And
sounds like it'd be fascinating.
Yeah, so I mean, it was fascinating. I mean, yeah, so you feel a connection with that. You know, we talk about the banana is 65% the same DNA as humans, and you know, like when you go, oh well, they're from a different town.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's a little small. You know, so, if you go a different color or a different status or a different sex, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I was watching these bees being born and I was, you know, connecting with them.
Sure. And just the experience of it, and I can understand how that could happen. I'd like to go back just a little bit, and you referenced kind of a disparity in the understanding of spirituality, right? What is your notion, or what is your reality of spirituality in your own life, and what kind of comparison, if you could make one, do you notice in others?
Well, the obviously you mature in 20s and 30s, you have a need to segregate and make distinctions that in your 70s don't really aren't really of much interest. So the
very
fact
true.
Is that everybody's spirituality is whatever they want it to be. But in astrology, the ninth house is the house of spirituality. And so I like to say for that it doesn't have to be new age spirituality, that it's whatever floats your boat, whether it's kayaking or whether it's mountain climbing or crocheting, it doesn't really matter what it is, it's whatever floats your boat. So your spirituality can be your connection to nature, but it can be your connection to whatever floats your boat, whatever gives you enthusiasm, whatever makes you light up. And whether it's you know, whether it's algebra problems or whether it's, you know, Indra's net, it doesn't really matter.
So what I think I hear you saying is that as long as there's joy in what you do, then that's the form of connection that you have to life. And in a sense, you know, it's a rising tide and all boats get floated from that perspective.
Well, I think that's a, I think I would, you know, I'd agree with you. It isn't exactly what I was saying is that it's wonderful if you can bring the joy into it, but it's something that you do with a passion.
Well, that's what I heard by float your boat. So,
well, yeah, it's a joy, but it's the passionate side of it. The joy is that to be able to do it. I had a client who wanted to be the world's greatest photographer, and he never could push the shutter because when he looked in this fancy camera, he didn't see the world's greatest photograph. He could have seen a really good photograph. He could have seen a great photograph of that scene, but he only wanted to see the world's greatest photograph. And so there wasn't much joy in his creativity there. So the joy, I think, is acquired taste. You know, I think that it's a passion and there's an energy and a love, you know, somewhat of a love for it, which love can be sticky. It can be, I love it because people give me appreciation for what I do. You know, it's not really love. But anyways, I don't make the distinction as much as the joy. As joy as I do make the distinction, I mean, ultimately, you're right. But I think it's that's where your passions are, but your passion doesn't necessarily, it could be your torment. It's your passion, but you know, your mother
said, so often is,
you know,
right?
good girls don't, you know, and so, or good boys don't. And so there's not the joy in it, but ultimately, you know, the idea would be, yes, of course, it would be a place of your joy. It would be an expression of joy.
Good. That's kind of what I thought that I heard. And I just wanted to distinguish that. But yes, I agree that, you know, the passion part of life is the one that's most purposeful for your own enjoyment, right? And to be able to find that and do it. So as you grew and your own understanding, what did you find that were the components that helped you to internalize your and actualize the visceral experience that you were having, being connected to that greater energy that most people around you evidently couldn't really sense or experience?
I thought of it more as that they were looking for something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One, so the glass is half full. So some people are going to say, let me drink that half. Some people are going to say, why don't you fill it up? And somebody is going to say, hey, what a beautiful glass. So they were in a different place.
Were there any that recognized that they actually held the pitcher?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I married one.
good.
So we held that picture.
You know, that's something
we held that picture for quite a while. I suppose we still hold that picture.
But it's indicative of, you know, this the kind of bipolar framework that we grow up in, and only seeing things from those two sides and not recognizing that we're the source. Right?
Yeah. There's a lot to recognize. Absolutely. So, you know, for me, the process has been two steps forward, one step back. It's just been having a lot of inspirational people around and just, you know, chipping away at my arrogance, you know, to realize that I don't know anything and that, you know, you think you're a hot S and then, you know, then you're maybe, you know, the hot disappears and maybe then the S disappears and then you know, I'm ready.
Well, I'm thinking of the Sergeant Schultz going on in my head when you said that, right?
So, I mean, I'm ready to be nobody doing nothing, you know, busy doing nothing. And it's
well, your stage in life, that's probably an appropriate place to be, right?
That's, yes, it is appropriate place to be, thank God.
So with the wisdom that you carry at this age and being able to observe things from a different place of non-attachment, let's say, what do you see, you know, that we've had a, for lack of a better, I'll just say horrific period over the last couple of years of this notion of separation and fear of everyone and the narrative that's enforcing all of that. How do you feel about that? What's your sense of where that may be going? And this might be a good time to kind of tie in the transition from the Kali Yuga to the Dwapara Yuga or Dwapara.
Dwapara Yuga. Well, what I sense is that life is so counterintuitive. And so, you know, in order to appreciate what we have, spirit takes it away with a laugh. And so, you know, what's going on, I think, is a deep, deep, deep adjustment. It's like, you know, I didn't have, let's go on a 2-year seclusion on my bingo card.
I don't think any of us did. Right?
But
yet
fact,
here we are.
Yeah. So in fact, here we are. And so I don't find any wrong in it. It's kind of ludicrous to think that some of the things that are happening and some of the narratives and some of the opinions, and I find it pretty noisy. I don't really get into it so much myself because it's just all kind of laughable. And
in a way it is. And I saw, as I'm sure you may have as well, kind of a silver lining in it all, you know, with the obsession.
That's mostly what I saw.
With the obsession on self-hygiene and the sequestration, it gave people a chance to slow down, for lack of a better, shut up.
Yeah,
and
stay home.
And to inquire what's really going on inside of them as a person, because there was no other interaction taking place. And so there were a lot of discussions with self.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, so that's the gift, you know, the how to get out of the suffering is we have to grow, but we have to, that growth, it means that we have to release that suffering, which means you have to be in it and feel it. And so we've had a lot of suffering.
Yeah, there's no just dismissing it. You have to go through it.
That's it. You have to experience it enough to be able to let it go, so that otherwise you carry it with you.
Yeah, and sometimes it's it's a comfort zone. Right. This is what we know. This is in the unknown, the ambiguity that life offers sometimes is really hard to take. And those of us who've liked the control, right, or that we thought we had, have now that control has been ripped away. And now we're faced with, oh, who am I? What am I really about? What do I care about? Who do I care about? What really is my passion in life? And how might I be able to activate that and engage it more? And that's kind of the thing that you and I both do. You as an astrologer and consultant and coach of in some respects, right? And me as a transformational coach, being able to utilize our own trials and tribulations and transformations as kind of a way to empathize with others and help them through that challenge that they may have.
Actually, I have a little bit of a different take on that. I mean, okay. I have that take, but another a little bit different take is that what I'm teaching is what I need to learn. And so my clients,
well, how true is that, right?
My clients allow me to sit there and expound on all the things that I don't really know that I'm trying to teach them, because I'm really trying to teach myself.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's another interesting point that we don't often recognize. I've recognized that as well, that, you know, anytime we start pointing fingers, there's three of them coming back at us.
Yeah.
You know, we think that we want to impart some wisdom on someone, and all we really need to do is listen to our words.
Yeah,
but they have to come out of our mouth for us to hear them, because thinking about them doesn't really do much good, right?
Right.
You get to hear that. And to be able to recognize that, though, is part of the growth in self-awareness.
So the other side of it is that the healing that does get done that isn't me. That is through me, but it isn't me. I'm there because I'm, when I say, I think you should, I'm really talking to myself.
Sure. And I hear you saying that the not you is when you release to it.
And when just, you release to the process. Right. Yeah, that's when, again, you laugh at it. You know, I guess I have to go back just a quick story. But when my father passed, when I was in my mid-20s, his casket had his wrong initial on his and his middle initial on his name. Oops. So I stood there saying goodbye to his casket with a middle initial that was wrong. And so I was about, like, say, 24, 25 at the time. And so, again, this is, you know, this is sort of my attitude, is to keep it light and to get laugh at these things and not take it so seriously. And my wife and I have been incredibly blessed these 2 years. We have a beautiful place to live, and we have way to have a fulfilling life in these limitations. We don't,
and power do much when everybody else doesn't have it,
right? Yeah, when we have our generator on, we put it on for 6 hours a day when we didn't have power now for 6.5 days. So we every day we're just counting our blessings and feeling so the gratitude. It gives us the gratitude because we met in India, and we've been in India with no power, and they stole the phone line because they could sell the copper, and you had no internet, and, you know, all sorts of every day there's weird stuff in India that you'd never think of.
Well, there's probably weird stuff happening all around the world that you never really think of, and we in America are kind of bereft of understanding or experiencing that kind of, let's say, emotional trauma.
Yeah, but now we're getting to.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's a stretch. We're all growing. We're all learning. Some of us are even thriving in this because we have seen that silver lining. And we're ready to step up to be challenged and do the things that are necessary to move forward and to help others do the same, even though we may not know what that is until the moment shows up, right?
Yes, and I wanted, the point comes to me is that that you can live in something but not be affected by it, that you don't have to be part of it. You can be in a time but not related to that time, that there are, you know, there's gambling, there's casinos in my state, but I'm not there and I don't know what's happening. And there's traffic in Sacramento an hour away, but I'm not really there and I don't really know what's happening. I could look on my, phone perhaps to find out, but I mean, things are going on that are coexisting, but that we're not necessarily partaking in.
Right. Then you're in your safe zone.
Yeah, I'm in my safe zone, but I'm not, I'm oblivious, in a sense. They're happening, but they're not necessarily happening to me. It's not right. That we're unconscious of them, but we can, if my wife eats something and it doesn't digest well, I don't feel the, I can feel the empathy with her, but I don't feel the indigestion.
Right. Right. I totally directly. Yeah. Yeah. And still there's that empathy and the compassion of understanding that and hoping they feel better soon.
Yeah. And that's a different energy. The point being for anybody that's sitting in this stuff is that you can choose. Ultimately, you can choose not to, you know. Right. I mean, there's definitely people that have a much more front line in this than certainly I do, and perhaps you too. You live, I think, more in a city than I do, but but the fact is that we do have, my sister wrote me that I have some relatives that just got COVID. That doesn't seem to be a problem, but it's touching a little bit, but it's...
Yeah, we've had some, my wife's a piano teacher, and she's had some students' parents that actually have recently, that have been avid mask wearers, that just recently tested positive for COVID. And so it's like, okay, so what's the sense in wearing a mask then? Right. And there's really, if you really look at the science behind it, there is no sense in it. And yet this is part of, you know, what we've accepted to be true, or at least some have. Right.
So that's the point that I didn't want to get stuck in the COVID particularly, but the whole part of it is that rather than see the cup as half empty, see the cup as half full, and that people are being pushed out of their jobs because they're not happy. The fact is they weren't happy in the jobs and they weren't happy in the relationships.
So let's look at this from a little bigger perspective and dive into your real work.
Okay,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
The first of all, would you explain what the Kali Yuga and the Dwapara Yuga are, the differences in them, and how we might observe them today? Does that seem like a fair place to start?
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
that's wonderful. So this is a series of yugas, the yuga ages in India. It's a way of keeping time from the very beginning. The highest age is called, there are four yugas or time periods, cycles. The highest is Sat Yuga, then the next lowest is Treta Yuga, then Dwapara Yuga, the energy age, and then Kali Yuga, the dense age. And the Greeks called it the great ages, gold, silver, bronze, and iron. They had a similar idea, but this teaching that I am particularly into has the yugas as a, so all of India, almost everybody says we're in Dwapara Yuga. And that we're in Kali Yuga, the lowest age.
Right.
And I believe that we're in Dwapara Yuga. And the reason for that is because, it's a teaching that I follow. He's the only one that says we're in Dwapara Yuga. And the reason is, when you look at the ages, is the Kali Yuga is still around. And so we don't want to get a starstruck with the fact it's not gone. It's in its dying dance, and that's why it's still here. But at the same time, we have the atomic age, we have atomic energy, we have the quantum physics, we have the internet age, we have universal healthcare. I like to say the song, Good Vibrations. This
right.
is not a Kali Yuga song. This is a very Dwapara Yuga song. His mother told him that dogs feel psychic energy. That's what he wrote the song about.
Huh.
That
interesting.
He, yeah.
And so, he lives just north of me here. I totally get what you're saying, and observing that, looking at understanding Kali Yuga, what it actually means, the density and the kind of the unrelenting drawback, right, where you don't really, or you choose not to step into the greater good or the greater person, for lack of a better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, if I may, so the downside is that it's very dense and it's very sticky, and we lose our focus on larger ways. But the value of it is that it is very dense and it's very sticky, and so it's really when you get your enthusiasm going, when you get your passion going, your spirituality, tying in our earlier conversation, when you get that going, then it's a real catalyst and impetus to seek a higher way, because the density, without the density, you can't really, you know, it's like you're jealous of your mate.
Right. Well, it's like they say that, you know, the change never happens until you're so uncomfortable with the way you are.
That's right. And so the density is really uncomfortable. And so that opportunity to really sit in the ickiness of how you feel about your suffering, whatever it is really helpful. It can be an extreme catalyst that you don't have, I would assume, on the ethereal plane and the causal plane. You've got these high vibrations, you've got other situations, but you don't have this one. And so you come down here, they say, this is not nirvana here, this is this plane here, this is the sticky plane. You've got beautiful sunsets and you've got wonderful nature, but you've got this density, which really gets you to feel how crappy it is to act in a low vibration ways in order to be able to go beyond it.
And the stickiness really brings you into that inability to change or to make the choices that are necessary to transcend that stickiness, which is what the opportunity that we have right now. And as you were saying, we had a brief conversation yesterday, and I really enjoyed how you explained the transition that we're going through and the positive things that are happening parallel with the transition from Kali Yuga into the Dwapara, and how those things kind of coexist for a little bit, kind of like in the shift from the Piscean to the Aquarian age, and what Jose Arguelles talks about in this 50-year period, where there's going to be a lot of things that are kind of mixed up, and the ascension of, for lack of a better, the growth in consciousness and awareness reaches a certain point where now we've got this new living awareness that we have an experiential reality in. It's not just thinking about it or believing in it. There's an experience of it that then we carry with us wherever we go. And so that shift in energy that we have is often felt by others, even subtly. And from what you were saying earlier, that seems to be true. How do you equate the Dwapara Yuga as assisting in that, or even identifying some things that we might be able to observe as evidence?
The body-mind connection. I used the example when I first got to California, we saw natural food stores. We never had seen those before, and health foods, and how the ancient arts, the yoga, hatha yoga, and feng shui, and I Ching, and all of these different modes. These were all the downward cycle. These were from Dwapara Yuga on the downward cycle before Kali Yuga, back before 600 BC. These arts have come back through across from ending Dwapara Yuga descending to beginning Dwapara Yuga ascending.
Mm-hmm.
They come across that way, and how it comes to us is that we start, it's exactly what I said at the beginning, is that I started making a body-mind connection.
Okay.
That's actually what I may have been talking about, is I felt it as something bigger than me, but it was in essence, it's this body-mind connection that we're bigger than we seem, that the energy is bigger than we seem, that we can walk in a room and they've already heard about us, you know, that they're already talking, that our energy is already there.
Well, I had an experience as a kid, just an example, right? And in relation to what you've said, I remember walking into the back of the church. I was maybe 6 years old. My parents and I walked into the back of the church, and I telepathically said, "Hi." And there were people just completely, I don't know how many people were in there, maybe 150 people, but there was enough close to me that they all turned around and looked at me after I'd said that. And there was nothing, there was no noise, there was nothing else that would have caused that. And it made me a little bit intimidated at that point, and, right? Because all of a sudden now these eyes are upon me. And yet there was that early evidence that, yeah, this is possible. There are those kinds of things. So when we dig into that, like right now, for example, in the extrication of the Kali Yuga, you know, that density that has kept us from being aware that there is much more to our being than just the mind or the brain, right? That the mind is greater than we believe it to be. The body is connected to so many things. And you speak of ancient cultures, right? The indigenous of the first brain being the gut, where we connect with the vibrations that exist. And they've had that understanding for millennia, And we're just now getting it through quantum physics.
Yeah, I was thinking of a story came to me, and then you gave me the perfect lead up if I can go do this. But
I read, maybe
10 years ago, I read this book on the Bushmen, the 50,000-year-old cultures in the Kalahari Desert in South Africa or somewhere down there. And there was famous books written in the 50s about it. And this guy had spent years with them, and they finally trusted him enough that they brought him on the big hunt, and he brought his truck, and they had the big hunt. And so he watched as they blow darted poison into an animal and chased them for 2 days before it finally that poison killed the animal. And they put him on the truck, and he was so happy that when he got that all the villagers back in the village were going to eat, and he was so happy to bring him the meat on the truck and bring him in. And as he was driving back, finally back to the Bushmen, he could hear in the distance that they were singing in the village the big kill song. They already knew that the big kill had happened. 50,000 year old culture. They already knew it. They didn't need to wait for him to tell them with their car and everything. They already knew.
So with this kind of concept, I mean, it stands to reason that thinking, right, that there's certainly energy there, but there's no matter. So is there, you know, any kind of limit as to how far that telepathic communication can take place? This is one of the, you know, questions I've had, understanding that it's available and how does that connect in the larger being, in the causal and the etheric planes and the coordination possibly of some other intelligence that we're part of that actually brings people together as a result of that inner calling?
I don't think there's any, I wouldn't put any barriers on it. I think astral plane, causal plane, future, past, I think that they're all connected on some frequency to where the message should come right away. I had a lady friend who, if I thought of her in California, would give me a call. And if I was halfway around the world, I mean, I'd get a call within 5 minutes. And if I was halfway around the world, then it might take 10 minutes in order to get an email. So right. I don't believe that there's there's no reason for me to put any barriers on any of it.
I heard at one point that there's a reference. I was curious as to what the speed of thought might be. You know, we have the speed of light. We know that's 86,000 miles per second. And I found a reference that the speed of thought something like 841 trillion miles per second. And I found
it could be that the other person got the thought even before you got the thought. Because when you get really squinty eyed, did I already eat or am I going to eat? You know, is it already happened or is it, or will it happen? I can't remember, you know?
Yeah.
Gets so squinty that we lose the quantum physics of the entanglement, is that we think we're the cause, but we could be the effect.
Very true. And we don't know. And maybe that's part of what's happening in the Dwapara Yuga, is that there's these discoveries now of how much we are integrated into this larger scope of being and how participatory that we can truly be in it.
Yeah. You know, I got into this concept of holism. We haven't talked about this, and I'm not an expert in it, but it really makes a lot of sense that as you go up and down the levels of species, that there are an incredible numbers of connectedness, and that there may be a difference of scale, you know, that elephants and dinosaurs are bigger than us, but they're not really that much different. And when you get into nature and atmospheres and planetary systems, it's not any different, you know.
No, you're
the
right.
The sun, these planets are his children, you know, or her children, you know. It's not really any difference. It's only a difference of scale.
Well, and it's always made sense to me for, not always, but for some time anyway, that we've misunderstood that from a Christian perspective and how it was written earlier that man was given dominion over the earth. And we've kind of misunderstood that and such that it actually meant stewardship and or the dominion means to that we care for this. We're in charge of, you know, being good stewards, and that in this kind of acquisition phase, right, where that's been our preoccupation, is to acquire things and stuff and money and power and all these kinds of things that once we get them really serve no purpose other than we've, you know, caused harm generally in the acquisition of it in some degree. Now we're looking at, you know, this flip from the old profit over people and planet agenda to a people and planet over profit agenda that seems to be part of the Dwapara Yuga.
Yes.
One of the things you mentioned earlier about noticing the natural food stores as when you got to California, right?
Yeah.
In your 84 country travels, how do you see similar things in those other countries, or is America possibly because of its newness of culture, which we really don't have one yet because we're an amalgamation of so many, that's those types of things are still unexplored here, where in other cultures they've been around long enough that it's kind of an accepted behavior.
Are you talking about natural foods or other kinds of
the differences in the Dwapara Yuga? You know, you mentioned the natural food store.
Oh, the Dwapara Yuga. I find I'm not sure if this answers your question, but I find that everybody has caught up with everybody. When I use the example of, if somebody says to me things haven't changed, and I say, well, how many yoga studios do you have within 10 miles of you? And somebody said to me, enough. I said, well, that's like that all over the world. That it isn't just in California. It's not just in Phoenix. It's everywhere. It's Poland. It's probably Ethiopia too. You know, I can't say that I saw it there, but that was 10, 12 years ago. But it's happening everywhere. I see more and more people coming from all over the world in India. We saw Chinese people who were spiritually seeking. We saw the Japanese. We saw South American. We never saw those in my early years or 20 years ago. But people coming from all over to learn yoga, particularly to open studios everywhere. And as far as homeopathy and flower essences and, you know, all of those as a particular vibration, that's everywhere now too. When I started with those in the 50 years ago, and you remember the whole earth catalog, yes. You know, before computers, we had to make a catalog where all these resources, you could find all the resources for the new age. It's like a joke to think that you would make a book and that would be the book, you know, and maybe you made two or three later editions, but I mean, it's in the internet, but that was a stage, and everybody knows what karma is now. It doesn't matter where you are, and to think that they're from Scoochy Scooch and they don't get it is ridiculous, right? You know.
So in this, the transition that you see happening, in the last, let's say, couple of years since the beginning, or let's say in the last year, once things really set in, what have you noticed as far as the shift in the types of clients that you're getting and the level of, for lack of a better, business activity that they're engaged in? Are there
the business the more, activities?
Are there the left brain people that are now coming for, you know, some right brain training or?
Well, I've had a few more what I might call middle class or more ordinary American people. Now that I'm here a bit more because I usually travel, I'm not saying it's because I'm here. I'm not running into them here. You know, Zen, I want to go back to the changes within me. I like to talk about the fact that that I've been doing astrology 50 years, and I started doing Vedic astrology more than 20 years ago. And I did it with the Enneagram together, and I had so many things that I want to explore in that relationship. I met a teacher who early on who taught me a system, one of the most empathic and esoteric people I've ever met in my life was my teacher for a few years, teaching me how Enneagram and astrology work together. It's a sacred geometry. It's a very high vibration teaching, and he showed me how they interconnected. But my point being is that at the beginning of this year, which was last year, about a year ago, all of a sudden, I got an inward pull to study location astrology, which I had known about for more than 20 years, but had never felt any interest in doing. And
now that you're sequestered, that's kind of makes sense, right?
Well, it wasn't even being sequestered because I'd be sequestered in India, but all of a sudden, okay, a couple of situations happened that you know, A led to B, led to C, led to D, and oh, I'd like to study that. So I studied it for a couple of months and read the leading I studied it, and then I was able to start giving readings, and then during the summer there's a particular chart within the Vedic astrology, and I don't want to get too far into this, but it's a particular chart called the Navamsha chart, and it's a divisional chart, which means that it's that you take a you divide it by nine, which it's like turning the microscope into a deeper lens, and that particular lens is called the ninth. This Navamsha chart is called the spouse chart, and I knew that for 25 years or 25 years, and never felt called to do that. But all of a sudden, it occurred to me, because of A led to B led to C led to D led to E led to F, that spouse isn't the one you marry; it's the perfect spouse. And who is the perfect spouse but your highest self? And so it's the chart of who you become. And so in
it's
August,
kind of like the divine marriage, right?
It's a divine marriage with yourself. It's who you actually become. And so in August of this past year, I started, because we're in we're just into early January 22 here, I started giving those readings. And so here, without any planning, I completely, geared down. You know, if I was in neutral, now I'm in first gear here. And I have so many tools for people, because location for some people is really important to understand the place that they're at or another place that they would be at, and that it works or it doesn't work. And in order to be able to tell them who they ultimately will be. And I've had the 60s and the 70s are living that life, and the 50s and 40s are aware of that life, and even the 20s have an inkling of that's who they want to become. This Navamsha chart, that I think of it as a last few years of the chart of who you are, that you leave, you progress from your natal chart problems, that's your problems, and your and then it becomes the Navamsha chart becomes who you are. So for me, it's been like a shot of astrology that I haven't experienced in more than 20 years. I wasn't looking for, I wasn't expecting, but I was open to it. The thing was, is I was open to it, and I consider it an initiation. It's my own initiation into a sacred teaching. And the teaching is that maybe it's a teaching that I'm ready to learn, rather than that it looks like I'm ready to teach it, but it's that I'm actually ready to learn it.
Yeah. And to fine tune yourself in the process. You know, I think we're all aware as we mature, we realize how often things show up for us to learn more about ourselves and to go deeper and expand further as a result. One of the things that you mentioned that kind of tied me into it was I have had this idea or notion that, you know, that we're all cosmic consciousness condensed into form. We don't necessarily know exactly how that happens, but the experience I had as a teenager when I was asked if I was willing to die for what I believed in and then saying yes with the belief in cosmic consciousness, the experience that I had demonstrated that, at least for me, I had the experience of being that consciousness condensing back into form at the end of the excursion, so to speak, after I'd gone out through the white light and beyond. So then coming back over the years, there's been this notion of, is there a perfected form, fit, and function in the world as a result of that, where we are so finely honed and tuned in and aware that we step into those roles now, and here it kind of heads the edge of destiny, right? Is there such a thing? And do these kind of processes allude to that?
Well, I don't really want to touch destiny, but I will. What I will say is that that I feel that
let's say proclivity. Then
let's say that one more. What the word?
Let's say proclivity toward, rather than a.
I would say destiny. What I would say is that it was a natural expression of something that was within me. That the you know, when I got to the end in 1975, when I'd been studying astrology for 3 or 4 years, and I got the end of a book, and I didn't know what to do with it. I wanted to do something with it, and I wanted to make it my own, and I wanted to make it an expression. And I'd studied all of the how it works, and it just didn't vibe with me. Mm-hmm. And so the fact is that it took 25 years to get to the Enneagram and astrology, which was a real goose for my astrology, wanting to know how Enneagram and astrology work together. That was a sacred geometry vibration. And then the Wheel of Totality that came to me about 8 years ago, which was the energetic influences of the empty houses, that it's way beyond astrology, because astrology is too mundane, that the 10th house is career in mundane astrology, but in the Wheel of Totality, it's love. That's the action in the world. That's mm-hmm. the highest, that's the 10th house is the highest point in the sky. That's how people see us, is through love. And so that was 8 years ago, and now all of a sudden, the same spirits that have infused me with these other it's not that I've been infused with ability, but I've been infused with this. It's a skill in the sense that it's a frequency that it's a language, it's the language I understand. Is okay. It's a combination of mathematics, and it's a combination of words, and it's a combination of frequency. And all of a sudden, location astrology wasn't dull, but it was something that I could see that had a depth to it. And all of a sudden,
it
I
had
was
some
ready
synergy.
To a synergy to it. That this is such a new idea that I'm not really finding the greatest words here for the expression. It's a pure right. expression on my side. I'm hoping that's enough. But the thing is that I just saw it as I saw it as a gift, and I saw it as an initiation, and I didn't think that it was that I'm hot S. I just thought that it was just time, that right. it was just in the natural flow, that all of it had appeared. And it wasn't that I had time because it was the flu or COVID. And it wasn't because I had been a good boy at Christmas the year before. It just was, for whatever reason, that it's God's grace. You know, grace is grace doesn't have a definition. It's just God's grace. It just comes. It's no explanation. There's no understanding. It just comes. And so I didn't need it to be any different than that. But I tell you, I did a little bit of a whoa. You know, this was as I understood, as I went deeper with these particular modalities, I was blown away by their power and that how they all formed together with the other things that I was doing, just as a gift for me and for my clients.
And I was just going to say that that was probably a tremendous point of greater self-awareness that when you were in that, that it was that impactful for you to not only find it, examine it, but to have the visceral experience of it, right?
Absolutely.
Now, I have a question.
The thing is that visceral experience, that's all you need. It isn't what you do with it. I tell people that as soon as I did my first two or three readings that I was already successful. I just passed 1,000, but the goal wasn't 1,000. The goal was the first two or three readings. And as soon as I did that, and I didn't need anyone, I sent off a 5,000 word article and got it printed this year on astrology for the first time. I didn't need anybody to read it. Just sending it off, I didn't need them to print it, but the writing of it and the accomplishing of it on my side and the feeling that it's the best thing I've ever done and it was really a clear, integral statement of what I wanted to say, that was breathtaking. That was breathtaking.
Cathartic, I celebrated that. I think is that. What that's called, right?
Okay, maybe so.
Yeah. So speaking of that visceral experience and the magnitude of the awareness and the acknowledgement of it, how is there a maturation period? Do you find that sometimes there's an attachment to this visceral experience and then it becomes kind of a, I don't want to say ego, but that's kind of the word that I'm getting, that there's this projection or this desire to share that and to push it upon others as one's truth, or that it should be the truth for them. Do you find that that's part of the process? And second part of that question, is there a maturation cycle, and you know, even in the period of years as one grows through their own progress?
Well, there is a maturation process, but it doesn't seem to ever end. You know, it's like I like to say about parenting, that it didn't ever get any easier. It just kept changing. Mm. And that the challenges of having a 16-year-old out with your car and with the opposite sex are not much different than making sure that they're fed and the diapers are changed. But it's a very different visceral experience.
Absolutely.
And so when we read, we were talking about David, our friend. David Hawkins yesterday, and so he talks about, and other people have talked about, that the highest levels of the spiritual path are not any easier. You think, oh well, you got so much together, and he talks about the greatest challenge was, you know, whether it was letting go of life, you know, or letting go of the mind, and challenges that you think, well, you know, the ego is really sticky, look how long it took me. But the highest challenges, the differences in the samadhis are very subtle, but not necessarily any different when you're breaking through those last ones.
Right. And it, for me, sometimes seems that they're even more challenging because there's more discipline involved.
Yeah, more expected, more, less rope, you know.
Yeah, the more knowledge you're given, the more more responsibility you have.
Yeah, as much as you take on the responsibility of it, but
for self, right? For that.
Yeah,
for
I mean, it growth. just carries that responsibility with it. That's part of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that they're any easier. And the grace is that there's grace at that level too. And we don't need to worry about, you know, level 842. You know, the only one we need to worry about is the one that we're on. And yeah. And we don't even need to worry about that. Is that that whatever, this is what I like to say to people in readings is that the, you know, we're scared of, you know, we're scared of junior high. We're in elementary and they say junior high and we go, oh God. And then you know, 2 days later, it's like, well, junior high is nothing. And then they say high school and we go, oh boy. And then, you know, 3 days high school is nothing. And, you know, whether it be college or whether it be relationships or buying a house or renting a house and getting a car, it's a challenge on each level. And the experience is the same, and it's cumulative because we take our experiences with us, perhaps life to life. But the point I'm making is just this, that that I try to get people to see that you were okay, and so this will be okay too. Mm-hmm. That it isn't really any different, and that each age and each life challenge, it's we're just attacking it from different sides, but we all got to get to the same, we're all going to the same place where we came from, where we never left.
Well, that's the thing about, you know, the cosmic consciousness condensing into form. I did a little short clip of an example of it. You know, we're that point of light that bounces back and forth between here and the great light, however many times it takes us to understand how to be.
Yeah, and so you stop counting.
Right.
You learn to stop counting.
Yeah, and you just do the best with where you're at and who you are and what's around you, and that's all you can do. And to be able to look in the mirror and say, okay, I did my best, or, oh, you know, I could have done this better, or I could have done that better. And that self-reflection, of course, is how we grow, because that's where we find those things within ourselves that we can change in order to find that resonance that we know is available, because we have snippets of that, you know, even with any kind of practice. I think that there's moments of, for lack of a better, synchronicity, where everything seems to be perfectly aligned in the moment and you just get it. And it's such a deep, visceral experience that it leaves you in awe, right? I think that's about the best word that could be used for that, because there's just right. This, wow, right? And yet it happened.
Yeah, I like to say synchronicity doesn't have an on-off switch. It's always going on.
It is. It's just our
ability to recognize whether we tune into it or not. And going back to your feeling a little bad here, going back to your question here about Dwapara Yuga, it's the energy age. And so it's the expansion of the mind-body connection. It's new kinds of healing, it's new kinds of understanding, it's seeing the interconnectedness of everything. I mean, I like to say within 1900 to 1910, it was predicted that Dwapara Yuga proper would start in 1900. It was predicted in 1894. So between 1900 and 1910, we had the first flight. We had the Pavlov and the conditioning. We Max had Planck. The theory of relativity, and we had discovering quantum physics within those mm-hmm. 10 years. And if that isn't a gangbuster decade to launch something, I mean, it didn't look like it launched anything by 1910, but now 120 years later is like, wow, that's a biggie. And those things happened right then. And it's this deeper understanding that goes from, you know, can go from, you know, realizing that you need to eat a healthier diet and you need to not eat fast foods on some levels, to realizing that all outside noise is a distraction mm-hmm. on the highest of levels.
Now, it's the mention of, you know, the spiral upward, right? And kind of going back to where we were during that late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a tremendous amount of growth and understanding on all kinds of different levels. You had Blavatsky, you had Rorick, you had Planck, you had, you know, all kinds of things that were almost a contiguous, a simultaneous occurrence on multiple levels. And now with this shift in ages, it seems like those kinds of ideas and notions are taking a whole new level, right? There's this understanding that, okay, we are being visited. Even the military's finally said, yeah, we've been recording these guys. And but they can't, they still don't, or don't seem to be aware of much else, interactive wise, or purpose or goal or things like that, where another set of population have experiences that they feel like, yeah, we do know, and the government may not, because they're not at a level of consciousness to understand it. So they're not having that. And then there's the guys in quantum physics that are talking about 2010, Nepean Close offered a paper called the triadic dimensional distinction vortical paradigm, in which they posit that consciousness, space, and time are tethered across nine dimensions. And those same nine dimensions are kind of reflected in a visceral experience that I had going through what's called a multi-plane awareness technique that William Swigard developed in the 50s, right? And then there's another guy that had interactions with what he called people from elsewhere. He ran Canada's UFO investigation, funded by the Ministry of Transportation. So it was, you know, a legitimate program. And he was sharing in his memoirs, I don't know that he intended to have them published, but from his conversations, they were sharing with him that, first of all, we don't understand what nothingness is, that we, you know, begin with that point of awareness, speaking to the point of consciousness, right? And that we live half inside, half outside, and that time is a measurement to them of the change of entropy. Well, now we're seeing, you know, like Moore's law, right? Is that not kind of a evidence of how that's working on, let's say, fractal levels within the constructs of the reality that already is present, but we just may not be able to see it as such
yet?
So in this Dwapara age, then, would those, how do you see this next round kind of unfolding, and what we might anticipate, what our viewers and audience and experiencers might anticipate as some of the things that would give evidence to that on a personal level?
On a personal level.
Or even an observational level of the activities that might be happening.
Well, I think that everybody is progressing at their own rate. And so there may be a quickening, and there may be a percentage of the people who are quickening very quickly, but
the quicker, quicker.
So, but I mean, you know, the thing is that, you know, it's, it could be that until we're all there, nobody's there. So who knows what really is going on. But the thing is that, that I see these old teachings coming in. I see that more people from all over places, you know, when I've done some events in the middle of the country, and they blow me away. I had a guy I went to a show in Columbus, Ohio, and I had a guy in he was wearing like 2,000 Shiva beads at the show, and he told me that he was got the message that he wasn't to take them off. And they're like 40 pounds, and he's had them on for 2 years. And yadda yadda yadda. And I mean, it was like he could have been on the bridge there in Rishikesh, as far as I was concerned. And there I was in middle America. So if I had any thoughts about that, California's got it and nobody else, that's long gone. You know, I hadn't, you know, been back. I've been traveling the world these last 20 years. I've gotten a little bit back to the country for the first time in a long time. And, you know, we did a show in New York. I did a show in New York. I wanted to go back to New York and do the show. And it's in the hotel that Tesla lived in. And there's an exhibit in the basement of his room, and a few pictures and things that they had. And he used to do his experiments on the roof of this hotel. And that hotel is a little woo, you know, from him, and what he's gone, what, 40, 50, 60 years, you know, and it's still,
it would seem to, it would make there. Sense that there would be some reverberations energetically that would remain every place that has some kind of, for lack of a better, dimensional capacity for change, or that someone has initiated those types of experiments.
Absolutely. And as far as how, where it's going to go, I have absolutely no idea. I'm not so much into predictions. I can't really say, you know, I kind of feel like you were a little bit of the same generation. And this is a young man's game now. And I will say, I don't know if this is part of something for you, but, you know, we started getting stories in India about how that the guru-disciple relationship is kind of old school, and that the new relationships, whether it's Muji in, you know, in YouTube satsangs, you know, which is all over now, it may still have a little bit of guru and disciple, but it isn't the same as it was in the hard line. And the old hardliners have kind of left, and there's people who kind of this the new ways, and there's new ways, and now I'm involved with a group that's it's channeling teachings. There's no teacher, you know, in the body, and there doesn't have to be a place to connect other than, you know, online for a couple of hours. And and so I mean, you know, the sky's the limit as far as what can happen, what will happen. The Yukteswar's teaching is that the Dwapara proper is a 2,000 year cycle. And so we're 120 years here, 122 years into a 2,000 year cycle. So that's we're not even 10% yet. So, you know, like 10% of a birth, of a pregnancy is not showing, you know, you may even not know about it yet in less than 10.
And many don't, you know.
Yeah.
And,
so,
you know, there's so very few that.
So there, if this is a pregnancy, we don't even know we're pregnant yet. We're not showing.
So what do you think, as you were talking about this, I had this, you know, question that came up. How would you reflect on that which is you are seeking is seeking you?
That which you were seeking is seeking you?
Yes.
Well, it's interesting. I put this on Facebook recently. I put up this David Hawkins quote that basically said that that you think the little self is searching for the big self, but it's actually the big self pulling in the seeker.
Okay.
So yeah, that's magnetism. It's the magnetism is from the top. It's not actually from the bottom. That's our egotistical, arrogant point of view. You want to change that's coming up is perhaps this arrogance. We're going to let go of this arrogance. When you were talking about ETs and space travelers, the arrogance of a dense age to think that we're in the solar system, the universe alone, is a very Kali Yuga kind of an idea to me, to think that right here and right now and this is it is very small thinking, and all bets are off as far as how big the thinking can get in Dwapara Yuga, that there is no limitation. I wouldn't put any limitation on it. There is none. And so whatever you can think is possible,
it may even be probable.
It may even be probable, yes.
Right. Just the fact that you're thinking about it initiates it somewhere. And I think you ascribe to this, you know, it's like Napoleon Hill, whatever the mind of man can think and believe it can achieve. And yeah, that power that we have to step out of the lower self, the Kali Yuga, and into the Dwapara Yuga self, really has that kind of magnetism that when we pay attention, when we offer attention, intention, and interaction toward that welcoming, I guess, for lack of a better, because there's all kinds of ways that could go and directions, but the welcoming of the receipt of whatever it is that you're putting your attention, intention, and interaction toward, which right now kind of is like, okay, we just want to feel safe, right? And how we're evolving together towards being able to take care of one another better.
So I think that you can, that because you have the idea doesn't mean that you have to achieve it.
True.
And I think that eventually that you get, again, when you get squinty eyed, that did I think of it or did I achieve it? I can't remember, because I'm in all the bodies at all times. And it's just, it just happened. And it doesn't need a who, it doesn't need a date or a whom. It does to the mind.
The notion of one mind, right? It is that all of the things are already there.
And yeah, one mind, absolutely.
It's our, you know, it's our circuitous journey through it that relates to self and the ability that we have to perform in these bodies on this plane at this time. And who knows however many other planes we may be operating on simultaneously, because we haven't ascended to that awareness yet.
Absolutely. You know, it occurs to me that I could talk a little bit about descending Dwapara Yuga, because if you want to know what ascending Dwapara Yuga is, let me tell you how this yuga book I told you about yesterday, how they describe it. And it's like that you're in the Treta Yuga, and you're at the edge of telepathy, that you know the sacredness of everything. And as you get denser, and as things start to get denser in Dwapara Yuga, then you start having to have priests and you start having to have ceremonies, because before you could just manifest it because it was ethereal. And now things get denser, and so you want to keep that form. And so the way you do it is that you start having ceremony. But what happens is that over the millenniums, that you get
ceremonies get ritualized and lose meaning.
That's exactly what happens. And so what's going to happen the other way is we're going to get rid of the ceremonies and the ritualization, which is already happening in the sense of the, you know, the God is dead, you know, the Beatles, you know. So
right. Well, there's been a massive exodus from religion in general.
Absolutely. And so that's what's happening, is we're going to be moving up into telepathy, as we can just think our way there. You know, the mind melting, the mindfulness, you know, we just get better and better at that. And it becomes from rather a technique where we're sitting together or reading a book. It's like you just are that. There's like, there's no other, essentially it's no other way to be, that you come back to your to the interconnectedness, where you don't need language. You don't need to get a message from the hunters to the village. They already know.
Right. Right, because they're so interconnected.
50,000 years ago culture.
Right. Gosh, what could we learn from that? And man, it just, you know, but that culture too is a much simpler way of living. And we have built up this complexity that's so astronomical that, you know, it's hard to find our way through it, even with guidance, right? At least today.
Well,
and now we're returning to that simpler side of thing. And what I thought I heard you kind of alluding to is that in that place of just being, we've often heard that called the silence within, where the voice of being can be heard.
Right.
And so that whole, and that's been around for millennia, you know, the teachings of just getting quiet and paying attention, or not paying attention, right? Just allowing to experience whatever is there, and not have any constrictions on how you're perceiving it, just observing it and then making choices from that. Does that make?
Absolutely.
That's kind of what you're going
at? Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, as far as the getting out for myself, I remember when I first started homesteading in the early, at the same period, after the initial astrology and spirituality, I started homesteading. We lived in Oregon on 80 acres. And I used to tell the story, I went back to about the 1870s. We had no electricity. And I started by buying a hand saw so we could cut up wood. And that lasted like 10 minutes. And then I bought I got out of the 1870s, but I went back to it. Sure. In order to kind of come back. And so
just get
myself,
in touch, right?
Yeah, to get in touch. Absolutely. So, I mean, growing up in New York City, I kind of felt I needed that. And maybe that was just an experience that I was seeking. But, you know, I myself, living in India for many winters and traveling, I have simple needs. I don't really get a lot of mail. I get 4 or 5 months of mail, and it's not really much. We're not on many people's lists so much anymore. Maybe
how'd you do that?
A little bit more. you jump out of the matrix that you just don't buy into it, it's where you put your energy, you know, it's where right. It's what you're done, you move around, and so they lose track of you a little bit, and
somebody else gets your mail. Gets
well,
the junk mail.
Maybe
anyway.
They do, maybe they yeah. don't. Maybe everything dies off eventually, so the mail stops.
Sure.
But the thing is that you can't hold yourself up to anybody else's standards, and you can't compare yourself to anybody in terms of that you are or that you aren't anything. So the thing is that for you to take your next step, whatever that is, from wherever you're starting, and there's no good or bad place, you know, it's not like the game boards where there's a starting and an ending, you know, it's not chutes and ladders, you know, the thing right. is, it looks like it, you know, and it acts like it, but the thing is that when you let go of it, then it all disappears, and then it's just, it's that,
and you can blind, see what is.
Yeah, it's that dark space behind you there where the moon isn't, you know, that's what it is. It's the, and the earth isn't, I suppose. So that's the, at whatever level of that you're ready for, and that works for you. And if it doesn't, it doesn't matter. That there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. You just do what you do. And that's what I've come to. That what we do because it's our creation, it's our own expression of our own natural energies, the combination of the pour of my planetary energy at birth created this, you know, this entity, this being called me, that finds some of the obtuseness of mathematics and sacred geometry and psychology to put them all together and the planets into a format which has a particular frequency that I can help to give clients a understanding of who they really are rather than who they think they are. I'm not interested in giving a better story. I'm interested in getting people out of story. That to me is the better story.
Absolutely. I agree. As a coach, that's my approach as well. You know, it's you create the story.
You can uncreate the story. But they
Right. Well, it's a dual process, right? It's simultaneous. You're uncreating as you create. Is that like, you know, chaos has order in it. It's just, you got to look for it.
And order has chaos.
Yeah, exactly. Indra, this has been an amazing conversation. I really appreciate your time, and I'll have your information in the description of the video so folks can reach out to you and connect with you.
Thank you so much.
Again, this has been wonderful.
Well, I'm happy, Zen. Very nice to connect with you, brother, and happy to galactic gas with you for a while on a sunny afternoon. The warmest weather we've had in a few weeks here, and the sun is shining, and I'm feeling very blessed and very honored. So, thank you for your spending time with me. So
thanks. Yeah, it's kind of hard to put that into the short description, right?
Wonderful. I wanted to say I wanted to say, you talked about namaste at the beginning, so there's this old saying, the guest is God. So you're the host, but still it's God serving God here. You know, those are a couple of my sayings. So
exactly.
Many much love and many blessings to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And namaste and in La Ketch. Thanks so much for watching this episode of One World in a New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host, and I'll see you next time.